Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CPRMetro.org. Today is our second to the last penultimate show of our fourth season before we take a short break for the holidays. And when we come back in January, it will be our fifth year of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. And I can hardly believe that. It's been such a wonderful time of exposing the truth, getting support from the listeners, and being able to have people on the soapbox that you don't see in the corporate so-called mainstream media. And I'd like to thank you all for supporting the show and listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. So today, our guest is Deborah Sweet. She's a good friend of mine, and she's the national coordinator of World Can't Wait, and she will be speaking about the upcoming closed Guantanamo tour that World Can't Wait is sponsoring and other aspects of being a principled activist in the empire. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Deborah Sweet of World Can't Wait. Deborah Sweet, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hey, Cindy. Great to be here again.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back on. You're one of our repeat guests that we have on because World Can't Wait and the organization, your national director, you all are actually doing something. You're actually out in the streets. And so it's, always wonderful to talk to you and have my listeners find out what we can actually do.
Yeah, we forged a bond during the Bush years, which was a really significant moment in what was going on in this country and the world, when millions and millions of people were against what was going on. But I think the bond that we developed after that, we have a Nobel Peace Prize winning president, the last almost 5 years, is in many ways even stronger. Because a few of us were the ones who were not afraid or not cowed or not bamboozled into accepting this and stood up and said, no, whoever's the president, crimes are crimes, no matter who does them.
Well, one thing that I want to ask you, and this is, it's not meant to be confrontational, but a way for you to, explain your strategy is that I believe the World Can't Wait used to be called World Can't Wait Drive Out the Bush Regime. Why is it not World Can't Wait Drive Out the Obama Regime?
Well, first of all, there's not an Obama regime in the way there was a Bush regime. Part of the reason that the movement could develop the way it did back in 2004, 2005, after Bush was, first of all, he was never elected in 2000. In 2004, he was selected. And so many millions of people had this palpable reaction, knowing that this election was stolen, and then seeing what was done with that power with Afghanistan, the Patriot Act, Iraq, all of these things that came, and a slew of revelations even back then about NSA spying on vast numbers of people. All of that created a situation where it was really possible, I think, to see that we could, in our millions, if we'd have been able to get to those numbers, really created a political situation where Bush and Cheney had to leave because they were so deeply exposed, and in fact everything they did was seen by a huge proportion of people as being against their interests. The situation with Obama is different in that, yes, Obama is the commander-in-chief of a government that so dramatically acts against the interests of the people of this country and the people of the world. Yes, absolutely true, and that's why we're deeply involved in opposing it. But it does not. It is not the level of a regime where it is widely seen as completely illegitimate, and that's a problem that we're working on all the time. I think if we're all honest with each other, we have to say, going back to way before this country was established, on the basis of genocide of a whole people and then set up on the, and even allowed to be established as a country on the basis of slavery, that there's illegitimacy running all the way back. A lot of people ask a different question, which I think is also valid. Why did you just get upset about Bush? You know, and there were a lot of people of ages about your age and my age who did just get activated about Bush, and that's an indication of how bad indeed Bush was. But this was all standing on the shoulders of what U.S. imperialism had done, particularly since the Second World War. The specific reason of we are not just uniting around an Obama regime is that to join in, and I've had debates about this with others in the anti-war movement, to join into a demand to impeach Obama at this point. First of all, it's ridiculous. The Democratic leadership of the Congress wouldn't even impeach Bush. Why would they impeach Obama? But then, you know, we also live in the real world, and we know that on the right, there has been a very reactionary backward movement for years now who doesn't even accept the legitimacy of Obama because he's African American. And that's not clearly where what any of us would want to unite with. So the legitimacy of Obama has to do with leading the biggest military in the biggest superpower in world history to do no good for the people of the world. That's where the illegitimacy comes in. Well, and if we could have a movement that was based on this is all illegitimate, then we should have that, and we should always be telling the truth about what's being done. Obama is in many ways worse than Bush, which you've said. We've said, and we keep putting meat on the bones of that.
Well, you know, we when Obama came into power in 08 when he won and was inaugurated in 2009, many people claimed it was a victory that we did drive out the Bush regime, but actually the orderly constitutional process did it, because the ruling class allows that process to continue because they know that their agenda will continue no matter who's in power. And so it was just, and Obama will leave in a couple years, but who's going to be next? It'll be the same thing. And this brings us to the issue that I want to talk to you about, is about the world can't wait and your dedication and commitment to keeping Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay, and the prisoners there to try and keep them, you know, their issue going, because probably the first promise that Obama broke. And so talk about the national tour that World Can't Wait is organizing.
Yeah, January 2014, just in a few weeks, close Guantanamo now. And that's a tour with Andy Worthington, who's a British journalist. He's been on your show as well, and we've toured with him for the last several years around the country in January, which is the anniversary of when the Bush regime set up this illegal offshore prison in 2002. This year it's going to be 12 years, and we're because it's so important to acknowledge and build off this heroic, intense hunger strike that the Guantanamo prisoners are still on, in fact. It began in February of 2013, and it really rose to a crescendo in May when the great majority of prisoners, at that time there were 166 left, were on hunger strike, the world was once again finally forced to pay attention to the prison, and Obama even had to speak about it twice. We were able to get 600 and some people to donate enough money to print a full-page ad in the New York Times in May of 2013 calling for the closure of Guantanamo now and the end of indefinite detention. Of course, Obama made a second promise after promising in 2009, as you mentioned, to close Guantanamo, that he was going to renew his efforts, and frankly, nothing has come of that. Four more prisoners have been released. Two of them that were just released on December 5th, that was announced by the U.S. military, were men who were born in Algeria, had citizenship, but did not want to go back to Algeria. In fact, they had made lives in other countries. The U.S., even under Bush, cleared them for release years ago. Other countries offered to take them, including Luxembourg, but no. The U.S. military 2 weeks ago forced them back to Algeria, where they have a credible concern for their lives and their liberty because of an Islamic fundamentalist government. So this is the only way that Obama is working to close Guantanamo. He's forcing people back to countries they don't want to go to and turning down offers from countries where people might have the potential of being safe and recovering from what happened to them in Guantanamo. The reason we're doing the tour, though, Cindy, is it's not only to keep alive the spirit. We really want to close this place.
Right.
We want to force the U.S. back from an eternal ongoing policy of indefinite detention. And it's really important to get out to the people. And for the first time in several years, I'm really glad to say we've been invited to campuses. We're going to Stanford, Hastings Law, the UC Law School in San Francisco, UC San Diego, Pomona. We have these invitations from student groups, and that's really, really important because the students we've talked to lately, going back 12 years, come on, they were in elementary school, and they don't have a sense of the horror the whole world felt when they saw those photos from Abu Ghraib, when the U.S. military was openly torturing people and getting away with it. And they don't understand the whole history of the Bush regime in particular, first setting up this prison offshore outside of the reach of U.S. law so that they could torture people, and then writing the legal justification for it. And they don't necessarily understand or remember the process of Obama campaigning on closing Guantanamo, announcing right away he was going to close it, and then not having done it for almost 5 years.
Well, and you speak about writing the legal justification for torture, and John Yoo, who was in the Bush Justice Department, is the one who wrote that legal justification, and he is a professor at UC Berkeley, and your World Can't Wait Bay Area chapter has been doing some a lot of work around opposing him and opposing and again exposing him for what he is. So I'm really happy you're getting invitations from campuses, because the colleges now and universities are getting more and more entwined with the military-industrial complex.
Oh, man. You've been out there with us, Cindy, for years. 8 years we've been at Cal, especially at the law school, protesting John Yoo and the climate that has allowed the pro-Democrat president and leadership of that campus to say, oh, yeah, well, of course, we don't really agree with John Yoo, but we're so liberal that we can even tolerate war criminals in our midst. This is really outrageous, and the process of people accomplishing themselves.
Deborah?
Yeah.
I can hear that you're talking, but I can't hear what you're saying.
Can I try again?
Oh, I can hear you. I can hear
okay.
you.
Okay. I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, start from...
Let me start from Cal and Berkeley and John Yu again.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Cindy, you've been one of the people that's been out there with us at Cal, particularly at the law school where John Yu still teaches for 8 years with constant protests and, you know, really struggling with people over the responsibility they have. The university administration, very pro-Democrat, pro-Obama, says, look, okay, we don't really agree with John Yu's ideas, but we are so liberal, you know, that we're able to have a war criminal in our midst and there's no problem with it. There's a huge problem with it. And the problem has been that people who should know better, because Obama was elected a Democrat, an African American, whatever the reasons are, a winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, have accepted what Obama has done. And the sharpest example this week is yet another drone strike in Yemen. Killed 17 people. A wedding convoy. This is a pattern all the way through the war in Afghanistan. The U.S. keeps killing wedding parties with airstrikes. Now it's cruise missiles fired from a drone into this wedding party, and they can't give any evidence that these were people connected up with intentions to hurt the U.S. These were civilians. And this is done by Obama, and there's no, where is the outrage about it?
In Yemen?
No, it's in Yemen, right, exactly. But where's the outrage in this country? There's very few people that even know about it because of the lack of news coverage. And this is all connected to the necessity for people in this country to see that American lives or people in the U.S., our lives are not more important than other people's lives. Come on.
I heard, well, the thing about this drone strike, and it's not too far off the subject, but the thing about it is we're constantly being told that drones give more accuracy, more precision to warfare, where, you know, we're getting this quote-unquote bad guys. So if drones are accurate and more precise, does that mean that our program is to bomb weddings and funerals?
Well, that's a really good question, because here they come saying the Yemen military, which is, you know, getting all this money from the U.S. military, says, oh, it was a mistake. I really agree with the gist of your question, whether that was a mistake or not. Even taking it back to the way the war on terror has been prosecuted, almost 800 men were brought into Guantanamo. Most of them, as our friend Ann Wright has said many times, were picked up somewhere in Afghanistan or Pakistan for a $5,000 bounty because somebody wanted to make that money. The great majority of them had no connection to any terrorist activity directed against the U.S., and the U.S. knew about this very, very quickly. In 2003, 2004, we learned this from WikiLeaks because these assessment briefs the U.S. military had made of prisoners were showing they knew the great majority of them. There was no basis to hold them. So why, somebody asked me this the other day, one of the activists in our movement who's been working on this, on these legal cases for years, you know, Deborah, I know what the talking points are for the public, but really, I'm just stuck. Why is the U.S. not closing Guantanamo? It's an embarrassment. We know Obama probably really doesn't like it, but why? And I think the answer to that is the answer to the question you're raising about what are mistakes. The U.S. above everything else pursues its interests as an imperialist superpower. It cannot, and I'm talking you know, from within how they see things right now. They don't feel they can afford to ever be seen as weak, you know. And so they have to strike fear into whole populations. Us, whole populations of us being spied upon systematically by the NSA, but with drones and the threat of indefinite detention, torture being rendered and seized for people all across the Middle East right now. And it's the reason that people hate the U.S., but the U.S. cannot back off if it is to maintain unchallengeable, unquestioned power in that part of the world. And that's, you know, that's really what you and I are here to say to people. This is not in our interest, much less in the interest of people there. And we really demand and insist that the U.S. back off. And we know that just appealing to the powers that be in the Congress and so forth is not going to accomplish that. We have to create a political situation among the people where we won't, in our masses and millions, accept it anymore. And that's the reason to, you know, that we're crisscrossing the country to speak to people and, you know, constantly writing and doing exposure about what's going on.
Well,
the truth out there.
Yeah, we see that, you know, the budget for next year is going to be super high on defense, and again, more so-called military aid to Israel. And you're talking about Washington can't be seen as being weak or the empire. And we just were, you know, given false hope about Iran that Obama was going to, or the Obama administration was going to be some kind of super diplomat. But now we see that Washington is increasing sanctions against Iran. And so when you're out there, because, you know, I just rode my bike across the United States, and I think people are more afraid right now of their economic future, of the future of, you know, being wage slaves in this capitalist system. They're feeling very insecure. Do you bring in that immense military budget? Because, you know, I hate to go at it from this way, because I agree with you that, you know, fellow human beings are being terrorized, they're being murdered, they're being tortured, they're being falsely detained, illegally detained. But do you try and say, hey, you know, if our military budget wasn't sucking the life out of our community and out of our nation, these are the programs that we could be, you know, the prioritize our resources in a different way. Do you talk about that, or do you find people talking about that when you're out and about?
Well, there's answers on different levels, and I'll try to be brief. Number one, since I was active around Vietnam.
You give us your answer.
Okay, and you can cut me later. Since I've been active around Vietnam, like say 45 years ago, I have never once seen somebody get converted to the cause of being anti-war because it was a money thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's always on the basis of morality and outrage, so I do take that into account. On the bigger questions, I always try to tell the truth to people, and I think we all understand that the choices of how the U.S. spends its money, or we should understand this, is really to promote U.S. interests. And you can't have this vast global network of exploiting capital, that is corporations and all this investment around the world, exploiting, sucking the life out of really several billions of people who are now sweatshopping to produce goods that are traded all around the world, and a lot of that profit comes into the ruling class of the U.S. They can't have that global network without a military machine, 1,100 bases around the world, protecting U.S. capital. So if they didn't have that U.S. military network, we would be looking at a whole different situation. And yes, I believe as a revolutionary that it is possible, and there's a whole great potential to recreate the world on the basis of a whole different economic foundation and provide for the people of the world, including the people in this country. You go out to talk to people right now, and the latest statistics are 1 out of 5 children in the United States is in poverty. And that's right. Just the official statistics. You know, the poverty, that is where you can't even afford to eat. So a big percentage of people in this country are really struggling, and they're in fear, and they should not be afraid of peasants in Yemen, Pakistan, or Afghanistan trying to take what they have. They should correctly be afraid of this system, which doesn't give a damn about the basic people here and the people living anywhere. That otherwise, if they did, why would they be cutting food stamps now, when even people working at Walmart make so little that they qualified for food stamps, at least they did this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complicated thing, and, you know, we need a revolution in this country. We need to get away from commodity production. There are people working on that. There's a lot to be grappled with. I have been thinking about this as I'm preparing for this Guantanamo tour. We always need to go out and tell people why this is happening as best as we understand it. And I think this whole war on terror that started in 2001 under the Bush regime and has many ways been expanded under the Obama administration is profoundly against the interests of people of the world and people here. They don't even know the half of it, how bad this has been. And that's a big part of it. The other part is that resistance and people jumping into the truth of this, getting their teeth around it and saying, like, we don't accept it, is a really important part of change. We can't one day say, oh, you know, let's change all this if we haven't been working on it from many different angles all the way along. And so World Can't Wait is really dedicated to a couple of things: bringing out the basic illegitimacy of this system, and number two, internationalism. You know, humanity and the planet come first. We're not about the interests of the U.S. coming first anymore, and we're trying to spread that culture and ethos as, you know, intensely as we can.
Well, Deborah, we won't cut your answer. Cindy Sheehan's soapbox, we can go as long or as little as we want. We don't have any time constraints. But tell us about how people can support your tour, because that is so important. It's been so hard since Obama's been president to raise money and, you know, get the people out to our event. So it's very important to give people a chance to support this very important tour, and where they can find more information about where you'll be and things like that.
Thanks. We're going to start in New York on January 9th. We'll be in Washington, D.C. on the 10th and 11th. And I hope people can come to the White House on Saturday, January 11th, when we're having what's become an annual but nevertheless really important protest of another year of Guantanamo. We'll be out in the Bay Area near you on the 12th through the 15th, and then down in Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego, leading into MLK weekend. People can find more about the tour at worldcantwait.net. on Facebook and Twitter with World Can't Wait. And we, like every other organization that's all run and runs on volunteer energy and a great amount of determination, do need money to pay the bills. I think I'm a sustainer of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I hope other people that are listening are too. You can find that at Cindy gives that information out on her website, mm-hmm. Facebook. And World Can't Wait also has a sustainer program. There are a whole lot of ways that people can support us getting the word out, and online you can find us. If you want to do it the old-fashioned way on the telephone, 866-973-4463. We love to talk to people. We actually send out snail mail. You can get on our email or snail mail list and be part of this. The really important thing, you know, is to focus on, you know, I think we focus on issues that we feel are most key right now. That's war, torture, government surveillance, mass incarceration by our government here or around the world in Guantanamo. And we really want to bring out the truth to people. So any way that people can help do that. We love to talk in schools, high schools, colleges. Specifically, Andy Worthington, I hope, is going to follow Cindy's lead and come out with a book this year.
Yeah.
He's already written a great deal about what we learned from WikiLeaks when Chelsea Manning leaked the Guantanamo detainee assessment brief, and that was made public in 2011. This was a wealth of information that had not been made public. And Andy's mission since 2006 has been to find out about all the 774 men that were in Guantanamo. He's
mm-hmm.
individual stories about them, and there were huge gaps in the information. So when he got the WikiLeaks briefs, and he was a media partner with WikiLeaks and The Guardian to go through this information, he produced, I think, a series of 14 long pieces. And I'm hoping that we'll get these into a book, because these are the hidden stories people need to know. And I think that will strengthen for the historic record and in a very immediate sense, the ability of people to know and understand that this was not about stopping terrorism. This was about creating 9/11s all across the Middle East. The U.S. creating 9/11s all across the Middle East and striking terror into the hearts of a whole lot of innocent people who, like people here, just want to live and survive.
Well, I'm glad you brought up mass incarceration in the U.S. because World Can't Wait was also a huge solidarity and support system of the prisoners here in California who were on hunger strike, that were in solitary confinement. And, you know, that's how these issues are all, the chickens are coming home to roost. And there's some communities in our country who have long known about the oppression of the empire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And particularly, you know, it's really interesting. You talk about going back before Bush. In the last 30 to 40 years, you know, the so-called war on drugs begun. Even going back to Nixon, there was an acknowledgement or a plan on the part of the people who run this country, even into the president's office, that locking up black people was a really essential part of counterinsurgency before the insurgency. And the fact that this country has more people locked up by a huge percentage, more than any other country, in fact, has more prisoners than the rest of the world put together, is just an indication of, on the one hand, how devious and terrible, you know, this system is, and on the other hand, how much they fear the people.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to lock people up if you're system is secure and it really is providing freedom and democracy. So there's two sides to this.
Spreading that freedom and democracy across the Middle East when we, like you said, have the highest percentage of incarcerated people in the entire world.
Yeah.
It's a hypocrisy of the empire. But like you said, with the things that Edward Snowden has exposed, that hypocrisy and that veneer is crumbling. And I'm so glad you and World Can't Wait are out there to help that tearing away the.
Yeah, and I've been thinking as we're writing to people at the year end when, you know, we try to bring in some funds in order to support office websites, mailings, and all those kind of things that are really critical if we're going to go out there and expand our mission, that one of the unique things around World Can't Wait's approach is that we primarily are not directing all our attention right now towards Congress, for instance. A lot
right.
of organizations spend time lobbying Congress. And I think the most effective time we can spend is going right out to the people. Because if we don't have a demand and a movement coming up from the people saying, this is completely unacceptable, Congress, Democrats or Republicans, you know, but particularly the Democrats, are going to keep on doing what their mission is to do. And that's to keep us quiet, to tell us to shut up,
mm-hmm.
to accept. That's what the role of the Democrats is. And I'm not trying to appeal to them to do their job. They are doing their job.
Right.
They are doing their job. So I know that a lot of times when elections come around, it is an important time to talk to people about what your government is doing. There is the Cindy Sheehan factor that comes into elections of, you know, trying to talk for real about what's going on, and I appreciate that. But for the most part, this is a whole system that really bamboozles people and keeps people out of any effective political life and
right.
out of really knowing how to change the world. So it has to come from us. It's not going to come from people who have raised so much money that they've been able to be elected. It's going to come from us and our millions and across all these borders, you know, citizen. I always say when people say, you know, let's appeal to the Americans, I'm like, okay, people who live in this country, citizen or not, voters or not, you know, people with degrees or not, self-supporting, so-called taxpayers or not. We are all taxpayers. We are all human beings. All of everybody here, you know, is an important part of creating potentially a movement for a revolution and a new world. And, I just want to say, you know, tangentially but importantly, I have been working on distributing this talk by Bob Avakian, Revolution Nothing Less. It goes into a great deal more depth on some of the questions I've just touched on, and I've learned a great deal from that. So people are interested. They can also write me about that film. And it's really important that we know there are people out there working on the idea that it doesn't have to be like this and coming up with an actual concrete vision and leading people to resist what's going on and to right now create a movement that's working to change all this internationally as well as here.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much again for being on the show, and I hope to see you and Andy when you're out here in California.
I love you, and we're going to drive to Vacaville if that's the only way to see you.
Yay.
I might be speaking at UC Davis.
Oh, wow.
There's a Muslim Student Association conference on January 19th, and I might be speaking there by drone.
So let me know and keep us posted, and I will definitely Well, I'll be up and down the state in January, so I hope we can
bump into each other somewhere.
And crash into each other somewhere here in California. So, Deborah, again, thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and keep up the good work. I know you will.
Hugs and solidarity. Thank you.
Well, that's the show today for the penultimate show of our fourth season of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. So as always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar of CPR Metro and my engineer, and for helping to rescue our show when we were about ready to lose the podcast, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, because of financial reasons. I'd like to thank Deborah Sweet for being our guest and for hanging in there for decades in the movement. It's not always easy, but sometimes it's harder than other times. And this has been one of those times. It's been harder than other times. And I'd like to thank you most of all for listening and supporting Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.